The original settlers of America came primarily for religious purposes. That was true, for example, of the Pilgrims who founded Plymouth, the Puritans who founded Boston and Providence, and what became the state of Connecticut. As the New England Confederation of 1643 stated, "We all came into these parts of America with one and the same end and aim, namely to advance the kingdom of our Lord Jesus Christ and to enjoy the liberties of the gospel in purity with peace." And there was Christian motivation for settling virtually all the other colonies of British North America as well. But in the mid-1700s, there were plans afoot by England to impose on America a bishop. If that were to have happened, all the blood, sweat, toil, and tears of the Puritans and Quakers and Presbyterians, etc., in other words, the religious nonconformists, would have been for naught. Dr. Bob Freiberg is a retired seminary professor who's been active as a chaplain in the Navy for several years, and he's done some important research on this subject of this one threat that the British, well, one among many, that the British made in the mid-1700s that would have had direct bearing in curtailing religious freedom, which was the very reason that so many came and settled British North America. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point, and we now talk with Dr. Bob Freiberg. Bob, sorry for that lengthy introduction, but I just wanted to set the table. Tell us about what happened around the time of the conclusion of the French and Indian War.
Okay. With that in mind, let me go ahead and first of all say that for the listener, put yourself back in colonial America right around the French and Indian War. We're talking about 1760. And if you are part of the normal religious experience in America, basically you know that the reason you're there is because you or your forefathers had left England because of religious persecution. And what I mean by religious persecution is the Church of England had all sorts of rules against people that were nonconformists. And what I mean by that is they were actually called dissidents. And in fact, if you go through a lot of the correspondence back then, you will find out that people that did not belong to the Church of England were either called Puritans or they were called dissidents. And by the time we come to the French and Indian War, even the Archbishop of Canterbury calls anybody that's not a member of the Church of England, he calls them dissidents in all of his correspondence with everybody else. And dissidents, of course, we're talking about Presbyterians, Congregationalists, Calvinists, people that were Calvinistic in their beliefs. And also you had the nonconformists, which were traditionally known as the Baptists and the Quakers. Now, the Baptists and many of the traditions that believe that you must be born again taught basically they learned that from George Whitefield, from the Wesleys, and there was a revivalist. And so there was a huge separation between the Church of England and also the those that were the evangelists. And so now what happens, you have the French and Indian War, and for up to this point, those two aspects were kind of separated. However, what happens is in the French and Indian War, because you have so much English participation in the colonies, they're broke. And so what they do then, what they did is they wanted to establish some kind of foothold or toehold. And they thought that the best way to do that is that they would, there was huge talk. It had been talked for about 40, 50 years of having a bishop of America. And what that would do then is all of the revivals, all of the religions of the Puritans and the Presbyterians and everything, they would have to go through the Church of England institutions. And the English institutions at that time was Philadelphia and New York. And in fact, there was an act by King George III in 1761 that basically he gave the rights and the authority of the Church of England for basically all evangelism. And this was done through the, it was called the Society for the Propagation of the Gospel in Foreign Lands. And it was a missionary agency arm of the Church of England. And actually what it was, it was kind of a Trojan horse. It was something that they would establish churches in congregational strongholds. They did it in Harvard. They did it in all throughout New England. And it was a way that basically they had Church of England churches right next to the strongholds of all the evangelical Protestants in America. So this was suspect. And so in the Church of England, what you have then is they wanted to take control of all of the religious life of America, and they were going to do it. There's eight different things that were in letters between Archbishop Secker. He was the Archbishop of Canterbury, and some of the leaders of the Anglican Church here in America. So those go back and forth, the letters and how they were going to do it and what they were going to do and how it was going to affect them. Well, a Puritan leader by the name of Jonathan Mayhew caught wind of this. And so what he did then is he started writing letters. So there was a series of pamphlets and things going back and forth between America and England, and basically talking about, you can't do this. and so it created a fervor here in America. And this is kind of the beginning of the whole aspect of going against England, because it was all strictly because of this Bishop of America. Well, because Americans, basically since early colonial times for 150 years, basically they had complete autonomy from England, especially from the Church of England. And also, historically speaking, they came to America to get away from English oppression. So they could smell that this was a plot to take over all of their autonomy, all of their way of life, all of their way of religion. And basically, it was a religious issue. This is even before the Stamp Act. This is before anything else happened. So there's a going back and forth of letters, of pamphlets, of debate and argument, and so finally in Massachusetts, one of the things that they had to do was giving the gospel out to the American Indian, and so a bunch of leaders, these were civil leaders, these were religious leaders, these were political leaders. They got together and they wanted to sponsor through the governor of Massachusetts. They wanted to sponsor an act.
Okay, wait. Let's clarify something here. It sounds like this latest group that you're talking about are those who are pro English, and they would be pro Anglican, they would be pro in favor of a bishop. And by the way, to modern ears, you know, there's bishops, you know, different places all over the place. This is not, you know, something we would understand as being so threatening, but it was threatening to them, because what it would have meant was that all that religious autonomy that they've experienced here in America with their individual congregations and so forth, it all would have been curtailed virtually overnight through the bishop. Okay.
Exactly.
So, all right. So bring us back to this move within Massachusetts itself, I guess, of some of these pro-Tory, pro-British, pro-Anglican bishop in America ruling over Americans. Measure, you know, tell us about what was happening in this particular incident you're talking about.
Okay. You had Samuel Johnson and a couple other Anglican priests. There was a, like I said, there was a flurry of a correspondence between them and Archbishop Secker. And of course, you had the plot to try to get the bishop here in America. However, in the meantime, what had happened in 1762 in January, all of the leaders of the of Massachusetts got together and they had an act.
Okay, now these would be the pro-colonists, the patriots, or whatever. They would not be the pro-Tory, correct?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. These are the people that many of them had been born again through the evangelical revivals of George Whitefield. And keep in mind, George Whitefield is still active in a lot of this stuff, and I'll explain a little bit later on. But Whitefield, he died in 1770. Now, we always hear about his work in the 1740s and the Great Awakening. However, Whitefield, in all of this, he was going back and forth to England and coming back to America and still holding revivals in America and England. But during this time, when he would come back, he was basically pro-American. He was against the crown. He was a loyal Englishman and also an Anglican. But the thing is, essentially, his support in America was the dissidents. And him and Secker didn't get along at all.
Bob, I understand that George Whitefield was kind of at the center of this attempt to rescue religious freedom in America.
That's a good way to put it, Jerry. One of the things that George Whitefield did, he had his ear to the basically the political goings on and what was going on in not only in Westminster, but also with the Church of England. And one of the things he did is he had a big beef going on with Secker, which Archbishop Secker, and it had gone on for 30, 40 years since the Great Awakening. But in this, he found out of this plot to have the Church of England take over the religion in America. So the second to the last time when he was here, he was in Portsmouth, Maine, and there he brought all the leaders together, and in this basically pastor convocation, he told them of the plot that England was going to be doing, that they were going to take over the religion, everybody's going to have to go through the Church of England, and as a result, those people, those pastors, took the message over into New England and the Middle Carolinas. And as they did that, of course, it stirred the people up, and the people were realizing that, there's a serious problem going on with England trying to take over. Well, part of that politically turned into the Stamp Act. And the Stamp Act was actually, part of it was to control the freedom of worship in the Americas, because every single piece of paper that the pastors would write on had to have the stamp on it, and so it was control of England over and watching over what was going on in the religious life in America.
So, in effect, the religious component of the American Revolution, which is almost always ignored these days, but that was an important spark plug to the whole movement for independence.
Oh, it's the match that lit the fire.
Yeah, and they say that Samuel Adams, who was the lightning rod of the American Revolution, he was described as the last of the Puritans, and I think we could add, and the first of the Founding Fathers. Thank you so much, Chaplain Bob, for being with us. People can subscribe to your free daily historical reminders, which is kind of like a devotional with a history lesson attached to it, at bob@morningblessings.org. Dr. Bob Freiberg. Thank you, Dr. Bob, for being with us.
Thank you, Jerry. Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.